Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
It's the Keith Walsh Podcast. It's essential like your breakfast. It will get you up and going, learn some things you didn't know. Yeah, it's the Keith Walsh Podcast. It's the Keith Walsh Podcast. Give you energy like Buckfast. And if your head's in a pickle or you're looking for a giggle, it's the Keith Walsh Podcast.
Yeah. Well, welcome to the Keith Walsh Podcast. My name is Keith Walsh, obviously. And it's been a while. It's been a while since I had a guest on. I'm delighted I do have this guest on because we spoke before on this very podcast and we had a great chat. I really enjoyed it. And I often think about him and I wonder how he's getting on. So I'm going to find out how he's getting on and you're going to find out how he's getting on. His name is John Connell. He's the author of The Running Book, The Cow Book, a number one bestseller and winner of Popular Nonfiction Book of the Year at the Irish Book Awards. He's an award-winning investigative journalist, documentary producer and weekly columnist with The Irish Independent. He lives in County Longford. I just read that from the inside of your book there.
Very good.
So that was very handy for me. I was, John, I was going to write an intro and I thought, I'll have a look at the book and see what it says there. So when the work is done already, why would I do it again?
Exactly. Save yourself some time.
John, just a couple of Longford heads chatting together.
Oh, I remember. You're a Longford man as well. So Lanesborough, and, right?
Lanesborough, but born in Edgeworthstown, as in like literally the nuns helped my mother get me out of her in Edgeworthstown.
Wow. Yeah. Well, you're rooted here. I was born in Westmead, so in the hospital. So you're even more Longford than me.
Yeah, your mother was sent to Westmead then.
Yeah, there's no hospital in Longford, so that was the nearest one. So that was the story, yeah.
Obviously, back in the day, I'm a bit older than you, so obviously 1973, you went to the... I should really find out. I mean, I'm intrigued by the type of work you do and obviously this book as well, but I often... And I think lots of men like have these thoughts, and I'd love to go back to that place in Edgeworthstown. And I often drive through Edgeworthstown and it wouldn't take that long. It's not a big journey. Like I could just take a right instead of going straight on for the west, you know?
Yeah.
But I often think about what was that place I was born in? What was going on there? Why were the nuns, I suppose a bunch of midwives in the middle of Edgeworthstown giving, you know, helping women have babies? It's mad.
Crazy stuff. Yeah. Should do the trip.
I should do the trip. I should take that right sometime instead of heading out west. I'm actually going to Sligo tonight to climb Ben Bulbin.
Oh, wow. I have never climbed Ben Bulbin. I've always wanted to, but it's quite hard to get a route to go up.
Yeah, I don't know what level of climbing and what level of walking it'll be. Do you know much about it?
Well, there's a sheer cliff face at the front of it, so you're not going up that way unless you're a professional climber. So it must be from the back end, from Leitrim. So
I presume I'm coming from the far side, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that'll be a beautiful experience.
How have you been? How has everything been? I mean, I'm obviously learning a bit from your book, but tell me yourself since we spoke last.
I'm good. So I suppose we spoke 2 years ago. We were in the middle of... the pandemic. We seem to have emerged out of that sphere of it anyway. I'm here in Longford. Went on this canoe trip and which was amazing. And I am just finished the next book and I'm off to Spain to research another one in June. So I'm busy, but in a good way. And it's been a really transformative experience coming through COVID. I suppose maybe it has been for everyone, but it just made me slow down a bit more and realize there's more to life than you know, trips to Dublin and or going to cities or whatever. And it made me kind of appreciate the little parish I'm in and the rural world. So it's been really good.
And I mean, we kind of, I suppose, I think myself and yourself possibly were maybe prepared for lockdown in a way, like, because you'd already started a sort of a journey of slowing down from where you were, from anybody that didn't hear the last interview.
Yeah.
So the journey, so you're sort of like,
I'm Mr. Slow now.
You were slow. Yeah. You'd slow down then. You're really slow down now.
Yeah, yeah. It was, I suppose it was fascinating. I was in America in January and February in 2020, working on a project about migrant farm workers. And I'd been traveling all through the southern states in the US, from like Florida to Texas to California, Arizona, places like that. And I came home for a month and I was planning, well, the plan was to come home for a month and then go to Brazil to the rainforest to look at beef farms there. And all of that was put to one side. And I found myself living in a 200-year-old cottage in Ballinamuck. And my wife decamped from Dublin and was working remotely. And yeah, we just got into this little space where we'd go and look at the sheep, go for a walk, do our work, and lived a really simple, quiet life. And as thousands of other people, millions of other people did around the world. And I was never more glad to be living in rural Ireland, because you could go for a walk and not meet anyone. And that was a good thing. It was a really... you know, I am conscious that it was a terrible thing for people as well, like frontline workers and medical people. And of course, the people who got sick and died, you know, COVID wasn't all sweetness and light. It was a terrible human health disaster, a pandemic. But there was positive things too. And I think things that made us slow down just a little bit. And I suppose in a way, I'm trying to keep that slowness going, even though life's getting busy again.
Yeah, there's a certain amount of stress involved in. I work for a company now called Thinkhouse as a creative director, so I write a lot of copy. And but there's the draw back into the office, which you know, there's no real pressure being put on me. There's almost like, yeah, it's just I'm being drawn back in, and I'm sort of like, well, I'll work a couple of days in town and work from home the other days. And but there's a pressure with that, like there's an anxiety with it. It's like, I don't want, as you said, it was a terrible time for lots of people, but I was going through, and for my family and for my kids, my daughter was just about to go to university. My son was, you know, 11, 12, 13. And it just felt like this was a great, like this is our last chance almost to just hang out as a family with no interference or nobody going off or nobody doing anything. And it was great. And I, you know, I didn't want it to end, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I know exactly what you mean. It was, and then, you know, in 2020 that when it started, there was that unseasonably good period of good weather. I remember actually going for a run one day and, coming across a nest of bees by the road and just hearing them buzz. And I said to myself, you've been here all along, but I've been too busy to notice your buzzing, you know? And so I really started to pay attention to nature more and life more. And yeah, but you know, the modern world is such a thing that we're busy again and you have to go here, there and everywhere. And it's, yeah, that it seems like, it feels like that time has ended in some sense, doesn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And there's a, I'm not saying, it's not that I'm in mourning for it, but you know, there's a period of transition, but at the same time for me, you know, I need to now fully immerse myself in the next adventure kind of, you know, whatever that entails and however that looks, you know.
Totally.
Are you still running?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Was out for a run yesterday. Haven't got out today, but I will get out after this. Yeah. Still loving it. It's was kind of, you know, there was no gym in lockdown. So got some weights from a friend, and I would run and train, and it's been, it was really good. It was a way to get a break from everything, you know, and running for me, you know, as we talked about before, it's more than just putting your feet on the pavement. It's cathartic, you know.
And as a writer, and I've heard other people talking about it, running and walking or whatever, you know, out for long walks, it helps to sort of filter stuff in your head, and you can come back with everything. So, I've figured that out now. Well, the bit I couldn't figure out.
Totally. It gives you a bit of distance, like, you know, and writing is such an immobile life. You're sitting there for hours on end. In my case, I write on a sofa. I've wrote all my books sitting on a sofa. So I don't have an office per se. I just have a space in the house where I chill out and write and put my feet up. So I'm immobile for a few hours every day. So getting out, whether it's on the farm or whether it's going for a run, it wakes me up and it gives me space to think about everything. And then, you know, sometimes, Keith, I actually don't think about the writing at all. I just listen to music or a podcast and just tune it all out and come back the next day refreshed, you know.
Yeah, that's my thing as well, as listening to stuff. So the book, the reason we're chatting is the book, The Stream of Everything, is out now. And it's a brilliant book. I love it. I just love the pace of it. It almost reflects the time we were living in, doesn't it? Like, I mean, what we were just talking about.
Yeah, it was weird. Like, I remember at the start of the pandemic, it must have been the arts minister said, the books of the pandemic are being wrote now. And I suppose, I'm not saying this is the book, it's one of the books of the pandemic, you know, and of that time. And it's actually a project that started 10 years ago. I was on Sydney Harbour kayaking and I nearly drowned. And I said, I made a little promise to God. I said, if you get me out of this, like, I'll make a little trip down the Camlin. Which, if people don't know, is the main river in County Longford, and it flows into the Shannon. And the timing was just right. Peter was home. My friend Peter Gagan, he's a journalist, and he was home from Scotland. And I just suggested it to him. And it was kind of, I'd had the idea for probably a year. And to be honest, Keith, I probably never would have done it, only for the fact that we had this time to kill, in a sense. And I can honestly say it was one of the best trips I've ever had in my whole life. It was amazing. And I've been in Mexico and the Australian outback and Midwest America, loads of places, but this was like right on my doorstep, and I never knew that that world existed.
And it's very funny. A friend of mine called Peter, and we, like, during lockdown, we used to go for walks, and more recently we did a walk called St. Kevin's Way, where you walk.
Oh, yes.
It's in Wicklow. So
I've heard of it. Yeah.
Yeah. You walk from Hollywood in Wicklow to Glendalough, basically.
Yeah.
And
it's a long walk.
Yeah, it's a long walk. And we camped overnight by the river.
Oh, beautiful.
And I did it with Peter, and his brother came along as well. And we were like, oh, we have to do that again. But he also bought a couple of kayaks, and he was at me to, like, oh, we should do something. There's the canals in around Newbridge and stuff like that, you know. And we used to talk about it, and I was like, yeah, because you see a different world, the world from the river is like you don't know what it's like from the roads, from the rail. Like, I was on the train yesterday. I was going, why do houses, you know, the backs of houses are onto the railway, and they throw their mattresses over the back wall. And I'm like the people on the train are going to see that. Like, they really, really need to tidy up the view from the rail, from the train here, you know. But the view on a boat, from a boat on the river, is, I mean,
you're below. Yeah, you're below the earth. Like, a river naturally runs lower than the ground around it. So unless it's winter and it's flooding, obviously, but naturally, normally without floods, it's below the river. Yeah, it was something Peter said to me early on. And he said, you know, 10 minutes feels like an hour, and an hour feels like 10 minutes. Like, you're on river time, and you're also on a canoe going about 2 or 3 miles an hour. So you're going very slowly. Even though it seems quick, time as a concept was above ground and we were below it. It was a really, and you know, in the book, I talk a lot about the nature of time, that there's theoretical physics say that the past and present is happening at the same time now. Events that have happened in the past might be happening at the same time in physics as the actions you're going to take in the future. And in a sense, you know, when I was writing that, it made sense in the river, because we were past time. We were in a different world. And, you know, in a few interviews I've said this, but the rivers are the last wildernesses of Ireland, because, you know, you were hill walking in Wicklow, but I'm sure you came across sheep or other people, or, you know, there was the hand of man was somewhere, but a river, bar there's a dam or a bridge, we largely leave them alone. And, you know, we met a few people along the way, but they were fishing. They weren't intruding into the river and trying to bend it to their own will. So everything is kind of wild and the way it's supposed to be. And I remember at one point seeing these swans and realizing that, you know, they were wild creatures and they were looking at us and we were looking at them, and they were allowing us into their world. And we actually were welcomed, but we were not of that world. It went on. The river goes on its own natural journey without us at all. And in a sense, you know, the world stopped in 2020, but the rivers and the seas kept flowing and lapping and waving, you know. Nature didn't care about the pandemic. Nature didn't stop.
And like the bees, I suppose, it's only when
It's only when we tune in, when we tune in that we realize this whole other universe that's going on all the time. And and I think that's the thing I'm trying to hold on to. Like I've just spent the last few weeks lambing some sheep that I bought, and you know, I was trying to just stay in tune with life and nature that way, and trying to keep the Camino of the river going, you know.
Yeah. What do you think our relationship as a nation with rivers is? Like, I mean, I just sometimes I think, and you're a farmer, so you might relate or you mightn't, but yeah, sometimes I think that we, and maybe there's certain places or certain people or types of people, and definitely like not, farmers aren't like all the same people, you know. There's different types of farmers and different mentalities and all that. But sometimes I think in Ireland, you know, whether it's construction or farming, whatever, we see the rivers, and we used to see them as dumping areas, you know, or just, you know, something to throw your stuff into after you're doing whatever job you're doing, you know, like that. It's not respected as the way you speak about it, you know?
Yeah, I think as a people, we have a strange relationship with water in general, even though we live on an island. We are, you know, I there's a bit in the book where I talk about the Aboriginal Australian context of the world. They call themselves freshwater people if they live near rivers, or saltwater people if they live near the sea. And in a sense, that's what we are. We're saltwater people if we live by the coast. We're freshwater people if we live by the rivers and lakes. But in a sense, even though that's a really good question, Keith. I know people who love the water and go fishing or hunting on the water or just recreation. And then I know people who don't really have anything to do with rivers or water in general. They wouldn't even swim. They don't even know how to swim. And it's kind of an interesting space. You know, when we were on the river for those 2 days, like we met lots of people. We met people from other countries. We met families. And they were all connected to the river in different ways. And I remember meeting one man from Zimbabwe who was fishing, and he was telling us about a river that he used to live near in Zimbabwe and how he had to leave that country and stuff. And it was really, I could see that the river for him was a memory and an attachment to another time in his life. Whereas you might meet someone who perhaps, you know, lost a relative or something to an accident in a river, you know, and the river becomes a place of danger and trepidation. And, you know, even when we were, the river was, the Camlin was so joyous and gentle. But as we got towards the end, it got deep and there was a bad storm. And then I had a little bit of fear in me and I was like, okay, actually this river has to be respected because it could actually do us damage. And because it had been so gentle and inviting before. So yeah, we have a strange relationship with water in this country. But hopefully it's getting better, you know. Hopefully there's over 3,000 rivers in Ireland. So you're not far from one at any one time.
Yeah, which is fascinating.
I
definitely think, I always think Ireland is the perfect size, population-wise, size-wise, to do everything right. Like, as a country, it would be so easy for us to, you know, have the right environmental structures and the right respect for things like rivers and the right, you know, I just think if we did things right, we're just the right size to
The population's not too big. Exactly, I agree. We could enact policies quite quickly, you know.
And I mentioned about the pace of the book and the pace of life at the time, but also, as you said, like the pace of the river, you know, it's all in the pacing of the book, you know. There's not a huge amount happening, you know.
It's a meditative book, like, yeah. Yeah, it's slow, it's meant to be, because that was the way the journey was, and then it was rambling and meandering as a river meanders. And I suppose ultimately, like, it was such an enjoyable experience to write the book. I used to love getting up to work on it every day. But ultimately it was about slowing you down. And I think, you know, a lot of the reviews have said that if you slow down and enjoy this book, you'll get a lot out of it. But if you're trying to read it quickly, it's not going to be your cup of tea. And I think it's about, yeah, just, I think in a sense, Keith, it's about me slowing down. Like, I've had, you know, over a decade of a very busy life, living in other countries, traveling around the world, working on things. And I'm gradually, I'm 35 now. I'm just starting to slow down a little bit and kind of take stock of things. And ultimately, you know, the book was about coming to terms with the past. And I think I needed to slow down in order to do that. And what I mean by that is I was trying to deal with, you know, a failed marriage, a broken friendship, and some mental health problems that had happened years before, but things that I had still been thinking about. And the river was this perfect vehicle. And a friend said it to me at the time, don't you know that Jung talked about rivers a lot, that there's the subconscious, there's the conscious, which is above the water, and the subconscious, which is below the water. And of course, the subconscious is much deeper than what's above. And that really hit me. And I was like, you know, you're totally right. And it was at that time that I discovered Lao Tzu, the Chinese philosopher and the guy who invented Taoism, or Taoism, however you want to pronounce it. And he has this saying about a river meeting a big stone, and that the river is patient enough to go around the stone, and that eventually it'll break through the stone. It doesn't try and push it out of the way, which is the normal concept of what we would do. We'd meet a stone, we'd get rid of it, and rather than flowing around it and eventually saying, well, look, maybe in 1,000 years, the boulder will be gone, you know. But that really hit me. And especially in the last year, as I've been working on the farm and working on other projects, I increasingly think about Lao Tzu and slowing down and saying, well, you know, it doesn't matter how quick the job is. If you slow down and get it done right, that's the most important thing. And it's been kind of, something I think about a lot.
Mm. Yeah, I definitely think, even personally, like with things, projects, whatever, when you look at things like that, it allows you the time and the space to let things happen in a more natural way. There's no, you know, there's no panic. This will get done, and you can tip away at something. You know, there just seems to be. I suppose it goes back to the concept of time, and there's a lovely bit where you talk about the mayfly, and you know, how the length of their lives, but the drama of their lives.
One day, they only get one day.
Which is probably something similar to us. And I was going to say, and the stars, but like compared to the stars.
No, totally. We're like a mayfly in comparison to a star. Yeah. Mm. Or,
I remember somebody talking to me once about like the Rockies you talk about that you see will eventually, dissolve, and eventually, you know, that rock will be gone, you know?
Absolutely.
And I think even thinking thoughts like that, you're like, okay, yeah, so this is not, you know, it's the impermanence of it, you know. It takes the pressure off a little bit, I think.
Yeah, I was listening to an interview with a Harvard professor about extraterrestrial objects, and he wasn't talking about aliens, he was just talking about comets and asteroids and things, and he was saying that, you know, they could have been traveling for 100,000 years, you know, and what are we but a blink in the eye of a journey of an asteroid, you know. How long has it been out in space? But in our you know, we, in our race in this world, we actually, you know, I talk about it in the book, it's about temporal markers, and COVID removed temporal markers. Are like milestones in your life. So a birthday party or a christening or a birth of someone, they're things that mark out a year for you. And COVID kind of removed all that. And so we were faced with, well, how do I mark my life? And so I'll talk to a lot of people and they say to me that they don't really remember the lockdowns because nothing happened, but everything happened. But it's just, it was on a different, we were in a different time frame, but some of us were not used to that. Some of us were, but some of us weren't. And so time seemed to drag on forever, you know? As someone who's like self-employed, I'm a writer. Time flows at a different pace for me. You know, it flows maybe in years rather than days or project to project or whatever it is. So it's just kind of, you had to readjust to time. And we're getting into like metaphysics here, but stuff I don't know much about. But time is neither fast nor slow. In fact, there are theorists who say that, you know, sometimes time moves quicker than others, you know, it's just, we've put a number on it. But
I do think, as you mentioned mental health there, I think that there is that thing of getting caught up in, as you mentioned, like occasions, like, so it's like, so it's the idea that, well, I'll get to the weekend and then, you know, your weeks are bookended by getting to the weekend. You know, if you say, for instance, you know, you don't enjoy your job, or get through the week to the weekend, you get through these weeks to the holiday, you get through those weeks to the Christmas break, you know, it's all about getting through and getting, you know, and after this and at the weekend, everything will be better. Or if I get to this point, everything will be better. For me, with COVID and the way it's written and the pace of the river and everything, it's just like, just calm everything down, slow down. And it's you know, for me, it's a lesson in life, because it's not about getting somewhere. Even though the journey of the journey you're taking down the river is, you know, there will be a start and an end to it, but that's not what it's about. It's about just being, you know, just in the moment.
Yeah.
People talk about a work-life balance, and I was talking to somebody recently, and they says it's not about a work-life balance; it's about a life balance. You know, and almost
that's
like
very clever. Yeah,
you just have to have every day should be something, or each moment it should be something. You know, it's not just about getting through these moments to get to a moment. Do you know what I'm saying? You know, which really comes across in the book, and it is a meditative book, and for me reading it was definitely like, I'm going to sit down here now and take a break and meditate in that. I'm going to go and read a chapter, you know?
Yeah, it's you know, my grandmother, she's now passed away, but she said to my mother just before she died, she said that life is a gift that's given to you. You don't ask for it, but it's given to you, and you have to make the most of it. And she was days away from dying at the time. And it's something I've thought about a lot, you know, and I talk in the book about the thin ledger of life in the book of life, where we mark down the good days and the good experiences. But you're right, it should be a life balance, not a work-life balance. There should be a good, and that's how I try and live my life. And I talk about that philosophy to Peter towards the end of the book. I say that there should, in my understanding, after my mental health problems, that there should be at least one act of self-love a day for yourself, whether it's getting a cup of coffee at the nice cafe you like, or going for a walk by a lake or your favorite place, or watching your favorite show. And it's just those little moments where you say to yourself, I love myself. And, you know, it's interesting because I remember being in a space where I didn't know how to love myself and I didn't have a relationship with myself. And a friend said it to me. He said, oh, it's really easy, John. He said, it's just being nice to yourself. And I said, and I looked at him like he had two heads. I said, how the hell do you do that? You know, because I've been so programmed to work, get accolades, get success. There was no part of me that was interested in building a relationship with me. It was all about accruing knowledge and awards. And and life brought it into me that it's actually about love, self-love. And if you can love yourself and have a relationship with yourself, then you'll be able to have a really positive relationship with other people.
Yeah.
If you're, you know, and I think that comes with maturity too, but if you're looking for another person to complete you, you might as well be looking into the face of the abyss, because the other person shouldn't complete you. You should complete yourself, and they are your accompaniment, your partner, your accompaniment, you know, and you help bring out the best in each other. But the completeness of life, it's a journey all of your life. I'm not here to say I'm complete. I'm not. But the completeness should come as an inward journey.
Mm. Yeah, beautiful. Yeah, I mean, yeah, totally. That's it. And I feel like, you know, when we talk about mental health, like a lot of, you know, people struggle with their mental health because of those things, because of the inability. Well, first of all, because we don't love ourselves. And it's like the shift in you was from, and I had a similar shift. I wasn't trying to make other people like me.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't trying to show off to other people and say, well, when people talk to me, I'll be able to say, I do this and I'm this and I present this show and this is what I am. And that would be impressive to them. It was just more about, well, I just want to impress myself. And like myself, you know, and that's the shift, isn't it? You know, that a lot of people don't see or don't know or don't
know. And I think we all come to that in our own way. Mm. But it's the journey we all have to make, you know. Maybe it's we're getting older, Keith, and we're more comfortable in ourselves, you know. I don't know, like, but I know myself, it was a 10-year journey, you know, and I've wrote 3 memoirs to understand that journey. And ultimately, as I finished the stream of everything, I realized that that love was the most powerful thing. And, you know, really, there were 3 books about sadness and depression and loss. But ultimately, I found myself writing about joy and love and happiness at the end, because that's where I was in my life and where I am in my life. But it took the bad to get to the good. And maybe in a way, if none of that had happened, I'd still be that person seeking external validation, but I still would be without having had the relationship with myself. You know, I'd probably be in Australia making, you know, TV programs, but not knowing who I was, you know,
and just getting by.
Just going through the motions, you know, you know.
And I like the way, I mean, I love the whatever it is about you that I'm going to ask my friend Peter to do. Like, it's a madcap thing, you know, but
yeah,
you know, but it's the confidence of the person who is comfortable in their own skin to say to their friend Peter, do you want to do this? Do you want to go down the river in a kayak? You know,
yeah,
or the crack, you know, which is lovely.
Yeah, it was great. And Peter was, you know, Peter just said, oh, I've never done this before. Why not? You know, and it was, and he enjoyed it just as much as me. Like, he said to me, this was an amazing trip. And And, you know, I had actually attempted to start it on my own, and it just didn't feel right. And I was in a kayak and it capsized, and I was like, this isn't going to work. And, you know, my wife did say to me, she said, it would have been a really boring book if it was by yourself, because the friendship is the thing that spurred on the conversation and all the topics we talk about. And it would have been a lonely book doing it by yourself, because it was also so beautiful that it was so great to have someone to share the experience with and go. I remember we came across a heronry, which is like a family of herons. I'd never seen that in my whole life, you know? And like, I can say to Peter, look, actually, do you remember that day when we saw that, you know? And it's shared experience, and now it's in the book, so other people can read about the experience, you know? So it's kind of it was meant to be for more than just me.
Yeah, totally. Hang on, I just have to let my dog out. He's scratching at the door.
Come on, Charlie. Good boy.
I tell you, that dog Charlie could teach you a thing or two about living in the moment. but the companionship, and also that idea that you're pointing something out to somebody, you know, like, you know, I live with three people who have no interest in birds of prey or, you know, raptors or any of that kind of stuff. But anytime we're driving down the motorway, I'm like, there's a buzzard, they're, you know, pointing things out. Or
yeah,
you see that kestrel there and they're all tutting at me. But it's the joy of being with somebody and pointing out something beautiful. But it is a book about companionship as well and friendship. I love you talking about your dad at the start, working on the farm, and that, you know, he's now got into reading and talking about books and all that kind of stuff. Is that a different relationship? Is that an unexpected relationship that you have with your dad, or was it always there?
No, it's a different relationship. We you know, the cow book was, you know, about me and him so much and our arguments and stuff. We don't have arguments anymore. And it did change. And I suppose they saw me as a writer and they understood that this is what I do for a living. And it's been a really, it's been great, you know. And dad does talk to me with different writers. Like, he met Donal Ryan at a thing with me, and he likes Donal. He does ask me about Donal every so often. He's like, how's Donal getting on? And, you know, it's really lovely. And I suppose I was lucky enough that the books did succeed so that he doesn't have to worry about me, you know. He can say, well, that's what John does and he makes a living at it, so, you know, it must be okay, you know. So that's a really positive thing, and it's been really special. And then I've after spending the last 4 or 5 months working with him on the farm, and as I get older now, I realize how much our parents know, and I realize that if I was in Australia, I'd never have had this relationship with him at all, you know? So I've been very lucky to get to spend the time with him on the farm.
Yeah. Everybody's getting a bit older and a bit wiser, aren't they? There was a lovely bit in the book where you'd just gone off down in the kayak. Was it kayak you took? Was it
a canoe? Canadian canoe.
Nearing the bridge now, we can see two figures waiting above, looking down on us. You made it this far, a voice calls. It's my mother. She and my father are standing above the river watching us go. Which way to New York? I shout, and we all laugh. I had to see it for myself, she says. And then you're talking about, have you got the hang of the canoe and all that kind of stuff. But it was lovely that the idea that they've gone off down the road to the bridge, the next bridge. I had this idea of, like, do you remember putting a boat or a leaf into the river and watching and running to the next bridge?
Yeah. It was totally, we were surprised to see them, and it was just really, I think they got the specialness of it as well, you know, and the joy. And I remember my mother said, and it's in the book in that chapter, she says, you're making a powerful memory. And And I was, you know, I didn't realize that it would be such a powerful memory, but it was. And it was just so, it was lovely to, I remember she took a photo and she sent it to me or in the day after or the day before or whatever, a couple of days later. And it was just this lovely moment in time of sheer joy. Mm-hmm. And it was just really special.
I think that Ireland was a hard country for people. You know, I have my, when I think about the 70s or the 80s in Ireland, like tough times, tough, you know, the attitude towards life was, you know, you work hard and, you know, life wasn't necessarily for enjoying. Like it was just for like, you, as we said earlier, like you might have moments of enjoy. Like there might be a wedding or there might be a christening, or there might be whatever. There might be a religious festival or something, and that you'd have those moments, or lads might go down to the pub at the weekend or whatever it was, but that there was no real, it was a hard life, you know? And I just think what you've done, I don't know anything about your mom and dad. I don't know how, you know, I know a bit from other books, but say for instance, I just happen upon this book and I read it, but that you've brought this silliness, into their lives, I don't know how to express myself, but your journey as a person to fall in love with yourself and love yourself and do the things that you want to do for yourself is in turn bringing joy to other people in your actions and in your acting and you're bringing light, and it's like, Jesus, like that's great crack. And they're getting great crack out of this.
They are.
Conversations they'll be able to have, and this will go on, and other people will be having these conversations about John, you know, your mom and dad and what they'd said about the river thing. And that'll be a conversation that will happen somewhere else. And it's just like, can you see the
ripples?
The joy of the silliness of life,
totally, you know. And it's just like they just say to me, what are you up to next, you know? And so my next thing, I'm going to Spain to research fishing in Asturias, which is in northern Spain. So they'll be like, okay, well, you can tell us all about it when you come home, you know. So it's just kind of madcap stuff. But generally, like, it's funny because I'll have an idea for something for probably a year. And then I'll eventually say it to my mom or dad or my wife. And I go, what do you think of that? Is that like, is that completely mad? And sometimes it is. And they just go, no, that won't work. And then other people, and then sometimes they'll go, no, that's a good idea. I think you could get a book out of that, you know? And it's just kind of, different. I mean, different people have come into my life since, I started writing these books and made new friends, and you know, my parents have met them and stuff, and people have come to my parents' house to meet them. So it's just kind of this, it's this funny little, these three little books about my life have managed to touch other people's lives. And so some of them feel compelled to write, some compelled to visit. And I know, I remember I have friends from Texas who bought the book in the airport, and I was in New York to launch the American edition of the Cow Book, and they said, we've booked two tickets to New York to come and see you. We've never been to New York. Can you meet us? And I was like, yeah, of course, come to the launch. And then I was at the launch, and it turns out that a friend was the military attaché for the UN for the Irish government, and he invited us to have a tour of the UN. So we brought the Texans with us. So just complete funny moments that you just, if you open the door to, you can say, well, let's do it, you know? So there is a silliness, and it's and a happiness, and it's great.
Yeah, it is. And it's bringing light, you know, you've allowed yourself to stop and hear the bees, and you've allowed yourself to stop and pay attention to the river. And that's given you these ideas of what could I do? Jeez, I'm allowing myself to go down the river in a canoe with my friend. And it's just that brings light.
So often, you know, Keith, we don't allow ourselves to do those things in life. And I know I wouldn't have years ago. And it's sad, isn't it, really? You know, we get so defined by our jobs. We might be an engineer or something. We say, well, I allow myself to have a pint at the weekend, and that's kind of it. And you know, even like with running, I found that, you know, I met people for, when I started running, I got really into running and would go to races and stuff. And, you know, met people from all walks of life, but that was their silliness. That was their moment. And it was their masterpiece of the day. You know, they're like, I have to go for my run and make sense of everything there. And, you know, it's just... And Irish people are endlessly fascinating. They want to talk to you about their passions, you know? But I just think that we have to allow ourselves to have our passions.
Mm. And I think too many people have put themselves in their own box of who they are and what they do. And that this is me and this is what I do. And this is what I do for the rest of my life.
John O'Donoghue used to talk about that. He said, so many of us are the stories we tell about ourselves. And, you know, and I think he was referring to people saying, well, this happened to me and then that. And he called it woundology. And I thought that's a great word. Like we're wounded by certain things in life, but then we end up letting it define us. And, you know, for me, I was someone who, suffered with mental health. And I could have let that define me. And then said, well, of course, my life's like this because that, you know, this depression happened. But you can say, well, it happened and I did this rather than because of that, you know. And so I suppose in a sense, Keith, I had to reframe my life because the way I lived before didn't work. So I brought in the space of, passion and silliness and joy, you know. I think that was one thing I remember from us talking the last time about the running book and talking about Pheidippides and him talking about joy, you know, and joy in the moment. And Pheidippides was the guy who ran the first marathon and he exclaimed joy and then died. But was the joy because he'd finished the run, or was the joy because he felt so alive, or was it because the battle had been won? It was all three, I think, you know? Mm. So I think, you know, joy is a powerful but underrated feeling.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think Irish people, I mean, I'm generalizing here, but we stopped allowing ourselves to feel proper joy, you know, but look, it's, and I think like something I talk a lot about is talk therapy. And that was the thing that allowed me to realize that, you know, just find the joy, do the silly things, you know, like why am I meeting some lads in Sligo tonight to walk up a hill? You know, there's no real purpose to it. There's no real reason for it, but I know that it's good for me and I know that I'll enjoy it. And I know that I'll enjoy the companionship of those lads, and we'll have a good chat and I'll be the better for it, you know? And I'm the better for reading this book. I could talk to you all day. Unfortunately, we probably both have things to be doing, but I just hope you bring another book out soon so we can talk again. It is the stream of everything, and I would highly recommend it. What's the book that you can't talk about as yet?
I can't talk about it yet, but it's not a memoir. I'm finished writing memoirs. I'm working on novellas and think pieces, and there is a non-fiction book in there, but it's not a memoir. So that part of my life is finished, and it's actually really exciting, Keith, because I'm kind of like off the leash now. I've told the story, so now it's like, okay, we're going to do something new and different. So it's been a minute and it's been a journey, but hopefully I'll be on next time to talk to you about the next book.
Yeah, definitely. I'll put it in my diary now. I love the book, and it's lovely to talk to you as always, and keep doing silly things. It's great. And I'm saying they're silly things, and I also feel bad, like they're brilliant things.
No, but silliness, joy, you know, it is what you want to call it. But go out and do something that that surprises you.
Yeah, do something silly. Today.
Do something silly.
You never know.
Be a clown for a moment. It's life's too serious, you know, otherwise. Totally. All right, Keith.
John, lovely talking to you. Enjoy the rest of your day. It's sunny. Is it sunny in Longford?
It is, yeah. I'm going to go for a walk in a bit.
Great.
All right. Take care.
Enjoy it.
Bye-bye.
Good man. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.